100 years ago this September, in a small Scottish mining village, the legendary football manager Bill Shankly was born. In 1959, he became manager of Liverpool Football Club. The rest is history. His passion and commitment was almost mythical. He transformed the team. He took them from the second division to become champions of England and win their first European trophy. Then he handed them over to Bob Paisley, who took them to success in Europe. At the height of his success, though, in 1974, he resigned, and it was a move that sent shockwaves across football. Now the acclaimed novelist David Peace, the author of The Red Riding Quartet and The Damned United, turns his attention to Bill Shankly, who he describes as not just one of the great football managers, but one of the greatest men who ever lived, in his latest book, Red or Dead. David Peace, you're very welcome today.
Good morning to you. Thank you very much.
After the controversy surrounding the Damned United, when John Giles and other Leeds United players objected to their portrayal in the book, it was, let's face it, it was a work of fiction, but anyway, they objected. Why did you decide to come back to football?
Well, you're right. I thought I was very surprised by the controversy. You know, I'd written books about like police corruption and the miners' strike in England, and so I was surprised that a book on football was controversial. And it did put me off for a little while. But I mean, this is a very different book, and I wanted to write a book that was about a man, about the success of a man taking, you know, as he did, as you said, as he took Liverpool from the second division right up to be establishing him as one of the most famous clubs in the world. That first part to me is a really inspiring, very powerful story. And then intrigued by the man in his retirement. And so it's a different kind of story to The Damned United. And I don't think it's really as controversial.
Does it have anything to do with the fact that you grew up as a Huddersfield supporter Bill Shankly was manager of Huddersfield before Liverpool
That's where it came from. You know, growing up with my grandfather and my father, and every Huddersfield Town fan will tell you that, you know, if the board had given Shankly the money for Yates and St John, then Huddersfield would be one of the biggest clubs in the world right now. So it's a fantasy novel for a Huddersfield Town fan.
Now, in the 50s, I suppose, as now, Manchester United with a glamour British football club. What was Liverpool's history at that point in 1959 when he joined them?
Well, they'd won championships before the war, but they'd never won the FA Cup. This was, and you know, people, you know, now, like, for example, my son doesn't understand
Who cares?
Yeah, but this was the big thing. They'd never won the FA Cup. And they were in the second division. They were really struggling. There was a feeling that the board and the directors, they were happy for the second division, happy with gates around 18,000 and so on. And, you know, that the ground was, a disgrace. The training ground was a bomb site, and this was the moment when then Bill Shankly walked through those doors.
What was it though that attracted the Liverpool? Because I mean, in the opening of the book, you have the Tom Williams and Harry Latham, who were directors. They go to Huddersfield Town.
Yeah,
what was it that brought them there in the first place and got them to watch not the match but the manager?
Well, Shankly had applied for the job earlier, but he'd been such a kind of overwhelming character, such a force of personality in the interview. He'd said, you know, I'm not going to take the job if I can't pick the team, if I can't do everything. But they'd recoiled really. But then after these kind of season after season in the second division, I think, you know, they realised the change had to be made. But also, and this is, you know, something that both Liverpool and Manchester United fans maybe are not aware of, they called Matt Busby and they asked Matt Busby, who do you think should be the manager of Liverpool Football Club? Because, of course, Busby had been at Liverpool. He'd been captain of Liverpool.
If that was to happen now...
He said, you know, Bill Shankly is the man for you. Walter Winterbottom told them too. They rang around, but it was Busby who said, get Bill Shankly.
So that's more or less how you opened the book.
Yeah,
that is fact. That's not fiction.
No, that's a fact, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd say there were a lot of Manchester United supporters would say of Busby, why didn't you suggest the worst possible manager?
Shankly used to always threaten to resign. There's a moment when the board sold Johnny Morrissey from Liverpool to Everton, and Shankly typed out, you know, he resigned on almost a weekly basis and typed out his resignation letter, went over to see Busby cursing and cursing, saying, Matt, I'm gone, I'm finished, I've walked out the door, and Busby talked him into staying.
Which, if any, of the team that he created in the 1960s was already there when he arrived? Was Roger Hunt
was there. Roger Hunt was there.
Very young Roger Hunt.
Yeah, very young Roger Hunt. There were people, you see, I mean, when I mean, this is again the way football was in those days. There were like 50 or 60 players on the books when he got there, and it took him a while. It took him a while to kind of sort things out. But so some people were there. Hunt was there. Tommy Lawrence, Jerry Byrne, I think, were there in and around the team.
And then he started to bring
players through as well. So he was, but it was the you know, really, people say that the turning point was these key signings, the signings that he wanted at Huddersfield, which was St John and Yates.
And Yates, we'll come to those in a minute. Yeah. But who was there, and this was crucial, was the coaching staff. Because the coaching staff was probably better than the playing staff when you arrived. Paisley was there, Bob Paisley was there, Joe Fagan
Reuben Bennett, the people that we call now the boot room.
Explain the origin of that phrase, the boot room, what it says.
I mean, Paisley, Joe Fagan, Reuben Bennett, and then down the years, like Ronnie Moran, and people would join. That this was the place where they cleaned the boots after the game, and the boots were all hung up, and they would. This was a place where they would sit, and they would read. Actually, Paisley liked the horses, and they liked a beer, and they would sit around and drink and chat. One kind of myth though is that Shankly first of all created the boot room. He didn't. It was already there, and also that he spent time there. He didn't. He was slightly remote from them, but he would go down and chat to them. And that was his great. I think a very wise thing in those days, as now, people usually bring in their own guys, their own coaches. But he didn't. He knew these people. He played with some of them or against them, and he said, "No, you be loyal to me. I'll be loyal to you, and we can do this together."
What sort of regime then did he operate when he arrived at first? I mean, he instituted things like, I think the warm down, for example. Nobody knew what it was. Nobody called it warm.
Yeah, I mean, he was. In many ways, he did revolutionize the game in these kind of ideas of like the warm down and he was obsessed with like physical fitness, with diet. He would, for example, jumping ahead, Emlyn Hughes used to be eating fry ups, and he would call the landlady of the house and say, you're poisoning, you're a witch, stop feeding this man with, orange juice and toast. He didn't like coffee, for example. He had things that now we take, for example, Arsene Wenger imported into the English game, but Shankly was saying the same. Yeah. A very, very kind of rigid training. He invented him and Paisley invented and built things like the box, which was like, four pieces of wood where they threw a ball in and the two players hit the ball back and forward off the sides of sweat box, these different shooting boards, all these different things that him and Paisley built by hand.
Okay, talk about those crucial early signings, because they did appear to make a difference. Ron Yates, the big centre half, and Ian St. John, the forward.
He'd seen them many times, and as we've said, he went to the Huddersfield board and they said, no, this isn't, we haven't the money for you. And so, again, he went to the board. I think it's into the second full season, though. He gets to the end of... He joins midway through a season. They don't get promoted, and then they don't get... he brings them in then in the season after. And he goes to the board and says, these are the players we need. And again, it was a... St John, he got there. He got that quite quickly. But I mean, Yates, I mean, was he had to. There was Shankly had he had his ways and means, and he kind of would like trick boards and other clubs and things and trick people. But he got him in the end.
He was, as you say, renowned for his attention to detail. He was also renowned for his caustic wit. He could use that to very good effect, couldn't he?
Yeah. I mean, the stories are legendary. The one with Yates, where Yates when he meets Yates, Yates says to him, "So, Mr. Shankly, where exactly is Liverpool?" And Yates is meaning geographically, and Shankly says, "We're in the first division." And Yates says, "Yeah, I didn't mean that, Mr. Shankly. I meant where is it? In the country. But I know you're not in the first division. You're in the second division." And he says, "Aye, but well, with you in the team, we will be in the first division."
He was also asked about a player, apparently on one occasion, and he would have been involved himself at one point in Preston North End. Tom Finney being the great footballer in Preston North End, and he was asked, "Was somebody as good as Finney?" And he said, "Ah, he's as good as Finney, but then Tom's getting on for 60."
it's a long book, but. I could have written double the length of a book because there's so many stories.
The big ambition was to win the FA Cup. Yeah. I remember as a kid watching, I think it was probably the first time I ever watched an FA Cup final. And interestingly, the team he beat was a team that would become one of the great rivals.
Yeah.
That's Leeds.
Yeah, but I mean, and actually, I mean that the Leeds, Liverpool. I mean, they, I mean, from really the whole
Lancashire,
period,
Yorkshire,
yeah,
the
and
War
the whole
the
period, the whole period,
red and white.
Yeah, and it was, you know, throughout that whole period of Shankly's time at Liverpool, there were kind of some epic battles between the two clubs. And actually, you know, one of the things that a lot of Leeds fans will say that Leeds never won enough under Revy, but actually, you know, under Shankly, there are 7 years actually during that period when Liverpool never won anything. Liverpool and Leeds were always there and thereabouts. You know, Arsenal, of course, pipped them and got the double. So, you know.
I remember that with great fondness. Good old Michael Thomas. Anyway, is he responsible? Sorry, now we'll go back to the 1970s. You're talking about a very different Arsenal. Is he responsible for the all-red Liverpool kit?
Yep,
they used to be red and white.
Yeah, and he did, you know, before they played Anderlecht, they were very worried. Him and Paisley had been to see, I mean, this Anderlecht side, they'd you know, they were basically the Belgian national team, really good team. They'd been to see them play and they were really worried. And suddenly driving back from the airport, how it came into his mind, he suddenly got Paisley to pull up a sports shop, goes into the sports shop, comes out with two big bin liners full of red shorts. St. John claims it was him who actually suggested the socks, because he goes back to the dressing room, tells Ron Yates to strip off, put on the red short, and the red shirt, the red shorts and the shirt. And that Ian St. John claims it was him who then suggested the socks.
Did he actually believe that the City of Liverpool had two great football teams, Liverpool and Liverpool Reserves? Or did he actually respect Everton?
Well, you know, I think he really loved to wind up. Well, I mean, we'd call them now mind games, but I mean, he was at it. And I mean, you know, at that time, you know, there was Harry Catterick was the manager of Everton, and they were absolute opposites. Shankly was gregarious. He was in the press the whole time. Harry Catterick was, you know, a man who shied away from the press and was miserable. And Shankly's nickname for him was Happy Harry. But Catterick used to call him Rob Roy.
What sort of relationship did he have with the Liverpool fans, especially the Kop? They loved him, didn't they?
Well, and I think this is, you know, we can talk, you know, for example, what you know, obviously what Busby did with building up United again after Munich, and then what Revy did, say, taking, you know, there are many Clough, of course, many managers have done things like Shankly did in terms of the second division to the first division and so on. But I think we'd be hard-pushed to think of a manager who had such a relationship with the supporters. And I think this is why he went. His family were actually very happy in Huddersfield. I mean, they'd been moving from pillar to post. His wife didn't really want to go. But Shankly had been to Anfield as a player. He'd been to watch the boxing there during the war. And this is, you know, he knew there was this fervour and this passion within the Liverpool crowd, which he identified with. And
he might not have done the same with Huddersfield.
No, I mean, I would like to think he could have done. And I do think it's an inspirational tale for anybody. Mm. But I think there is still something, you know, he looked at that crowd and, you know, and he said, you know, I was made for Liverpool and Liverpool was made for me. I think the supporters and the city, he recognised it. It was similar to Glasgow, he said, yeah.
Interestingly, I think in Glasgow, when he went to football matches, he went equally to matches between Rangers and Celtic. He didn't discriminate, and
was friends with both players on both sides and managers of both sides, yeah.
Why did he retire abruptly after the 1974 Cup?
Well, this is a mystery, and I should say, this is a mystery, and you know, if you want to know the answer, read the book.
But
it's a long book. But I don't think anyone's ever going to really, you know, we're never going to really know. People have, you hear theories all the time, and since writing the book, people have been calling me with more stories and more theories. I think when Liverpool, the season he retired, Liverpool were knocked out of a European Cup. This was the thing he wanted more than anything. Like Jock Steeny's great friend, Busby's great friend, but got the European Cup. He wanted the European Cup. When they were knocked out by Red Star Belgrade, when they were not going to be the champions, you know, in those days you had to go back. It would take another two seasons to get back into Europe. And I think, you know, and this is why it's such a long book and so repetitious and with all the routines, I think he was exhausted and drained.
Hmm. And did he designate Paisley as his successor, or how did Paisley get the job?
Well, he I think, to be honest, he never really considered initially Paisley, just because he didn't think Paisley would want the job. And actually, he suggested Jack Charlton was his tip. But when the board suggested Paisley, he backed him. Yeah.
He missed Liverpool's real European glory because he handed over the team to Paisley, and then they went on to win European Cup after European Cup. He must have regretted that.
Well, I think, you know, the retirement, I mean, and the second half of the book is there's some very dark moments. He'd said, you know, my life is my work is my life. And I don't think he quite realised what that life without the work would be.
Yeah, I mean, he was badly treated in many senses by Liverpool after his retirement. I mean, he was banned from the training ground,
but they did. I mean, I agree with you. But I think it's important to remember they really begged him to stay. They offered him more money, but for Shankly, it was never the money. They offered him a directorship, but he didn't want to be, you know, he didn't see himself as a director. But I think there were a series of misunderstandings. He would go into the training still just to keep fit, and the players would keep calling him boss, and they would call Paisley Bob, and it was just unworkable, you know. So, you know, I think there was misunderstandings on pride and like a lot of pride on both sides. But I do believe by the end, some people have said, you know, he died of a broken heart. I think that's a little bit dramatic. I think, you know, at the end there was, you know, he was sustained by the affection and the reverence from the fans, because, you know, they would call at his house every day and he would invite them in.
He was a socialist. Doctrinaire or emotional?
Emotional. But I think, you know, for me, some people might say it's very naive, but it's to me, it's idealistic. And I think, you know, it's a narrative that, you know, we don't want to lose. I think we need people who we need dreamers. We need revolutionaries.
And when can we expect the book on Arsene Wenger?
Well, I'm taking my notes. Yeah.
If it does happen, I really look forward to reading it.
Thank you very much for coming in and talking to us today.
The book is called Red or Dead by David Peace. It is published by Faber. We'll take a break.